can't tell," answered Hazel. "All we can do is feed it and hope for the best. But, Bigwig, since you seem to be getting on with it so well, perhaps you can explain to it how much this means to us. It is only to fly over the downs and let us know what it sees."
"You leave him to me," said Bigwig. "I think I know how to do it."
Hazel's anxiety and the reason for it was soon known to all the rabbits, and there was not one who did not realize what they were up against. There was nothing very startling in what he had said. He was simply the one, as a chief rabbit ought to be, through whom a strong feeling, latent throughout the warren, had come to the surface. But his plan to make use of the gull excited everyone, and was seen as something that not even Blackberry could have hit upon. Reconnaissance is familiar to all rabbits. Indeed, it is second nature. But the idea of making use of a bird, and one so strange and savage, convinced them that Hazel, if he could really do it, must be as clever as Herrera himself. For the next few days, a lot of hard work went into feeding Kehar. Acorn and Pipkin, boasting that they were the best insect catchers in the warren, brought in great numbers of beetles and grasshoppers. At first, the gull's principal hardship was lack of water. He suffered a good deal and was reduced to tearing at the stems of the long grasses for moisture. However, during his third night in the warren, it rained for 3 or 4 hours, and puddles formed on the track. A cluttery spell set in, as it often does in Hampshire when haytime approaches. High winds from the south laid the grass flat all day, turning it to a dull damascene silver. The great branches of the beeches moved little, but spoke loudly. There were squalls of rain on the wind. The weather made Kehar restless. He walked about a good deal, watched the flying clouds, and snapped up everything the foragers brought. Searching became harder, for in the wet the insects burrowed into the deep grass and had to be scratched out. One afternoon, Hazel, who now shared a burrow with Fiver, as in the old days, was woken by Bigwig to be told that Kehar had something to say to him. He made his way to Kehar's lobby without coming above ground. The first thing he noticed was that the gull's head was molting and turning white, though a dark brown patch remained behind each eye. Hazel greeted him and was surprised to be answered in a few words of halting, broken Lapine. Evidently, Kehar had prepared a short speech.
"Mr. Hazel, is rabbits work hard?" said Kehar. "I no finish now. Soon I go fine."
"That's good news," said Hazel. "I'm glad." Kehar relapsed into hedgerow vernacular.
"Mr. Pigwig, a plenty good fella."
"Yes, he is."
"He say you no getting mothers. He's finish mothers. Plenty trouble for you."
"Yes, that's true. We don't know what to do. No mothers anywhere."
"Listen, I get peak fine plan. I go fine now. Thing e better. Wind finish. Then I fly. Fly for you. Find plenty mothers. Tell you where they are, yeah?"
"Why, what a splendid idea, Kehar. How clever of you to think of it. You very fine bird."
"Is finish mothers for me this year. Is too late. All mothers sitting on nest now. Eggs come."
"I'm sorry."
"Another time I get mother. Now I fly for you."
"We'll do everything we possibly can to help you." The next day the wind dropped, and Kehar made one or two short flights. However, it was not until 3 days later that he felt able to set out on his search. It was a perfect June morning. He was snapping up numbers of the little white-shelled downland snails from the wet grass and cracking them in his great beak, when he suddenly turned to Bigwig and said,
"Now I fly for you."
He opened his wings. The 2-foot span arched above Bigwig, who sat perfectly still while the white feathers beat the air round his head in a kind of ceremonious farewell. Laying his ears flat in the fanned draught, he stared up at Kahar as the gull rose rather heavily into the air. When he flew, his body, so long and graceful on the ground, took on the appearance of a thick, stumpy cylinder, from the front of which his red beak projected between his round black eyes. For a few moments he hovered, his body rising and falling between his wings. Then he began to climb, sailed sideways over the grass, and disappeared northward below the edge of the escarpment. Bigwig returned to the hangar with the news that Kahar had set out. The gull was away several days, longer than the rabbits had expected. Hazel could not help wondering whether he really would return, for he knew that Kahar, like themselves, felt the mating urge, and he thought it quite likely that, after all, he would be off to the big water and the raucous, teeming gull colonies of which he had spoken with such feeling to Bigwig. As far as he was able, he kept his anxiety to himself. But one day, when they were alone, he asked Fiver whether he thought Kahar would return.
"He will return," said Fiver, unhesitatingly.
"And what will he bring with him?"
"How can I tell?" replied Fiver.
But later, when they were underground, silent and drowsy, he said suddenly,
"The gifts of El Herrera, trickery, great danger, and blessing for the Warren."
When Hazel questioned him again, he seemed to be unaware that he had spoken and could add nothing more. Bigwig spent most of the hours of daylight watching for Kahar's return. He was inclined to be surly and short, and once, when Bluebell remarked that he thought Mr. Pigwig's fur cap was molting in sympathy for absent friends, he showed a flash of his old sergeant-major spirit and cuffed and abused him twice round the honeycomb until Holly intervened to save his faithful jester from further trouble. It was late one afternoon, with a light north wind blowing and the smell of hay drifting up from the fields of Sidmonton, when Bigwig came hurtling down into the honeycomb to announce that Kahar was back. Hazel suppressed his excitement and told everyone to keep out of the way while he went to see him alone. On second thoughts, however, he took Fiver and Bigwig with him. The three of them found Kahar back in his lobby. It was full of droppings, messy and malodorous. Rabbits will not excrete underground, and Kahar's habit of fouling his own nest had always disgusted Hazel. Now, in his eagerness to hear his news, the guano smell seemed almost welcome.
"Glad to see you back, Kahar," he said. "Are you tired?"
"Ving, he still go tired. Fly little bit, stop little bit, everything go fine."
"Are you hungry? Shall we catch you some insects?"
"Fine, fine, good fellas, plenty beetle."
All insects were beetle to Kahar. Clearly, he had missed their attentions and was ready to enjoy being back. Although he no longer needed to have food brought to the lobby, he evidently felt that he deserved it. Bigwig went to get his foragers, and Kahar kept them busy until sunset. At last, he looked shrewdly at Fiver and said,
Mr. Little One, you know what I bring ya?"
"I've no idea," replied Fiver, rather shortly.
"Then I tell. All this pig ill, I go along him, this way, that way, where sun come up, where sun go down, is no rabbits. Is noddings, noddings."
He stopped. Hazel looked at Fiver apprehensively.
"Then I go down in bottom. Is farm, with big trees all round, on little hill, you know?"
"No, we don't know it, but go on."
"I show you, he not far. You see him, on ear, is rabbits. Is rabbits live in box, live with men, you know?"
"Live with men? Did you say live with men?"
"Yeah, yeah, live with men in shed. Rabbits live in box in shed. Men bring food, you know.
I know this happens, said Hazel. I've heard of it. That's fine, Kahar. You've been very thorough. But it can't help us, can it?
I think his mother's in pig box. But else is no rabbits. Not in fields, not in woods, no rabbits. Anyways, I no see him.
That sounds bad.
Wait, I tell more. Now you hear. I go flying other way, where sun go middle of day. You know this way is big water.
Did you go to the big water then? Asked Bigwig.
Nah, not near so far. But out this way is river, you know.
No, we haven't been so far.
Is river,
repeated Kahar.
And here is town of rabbits.
On the other side of the river?
Nah. You go that way is big fields all the way.
Then, after long way, is come to town of rabbits, very big.
And after that is iron road and the river.
Iron road? Asked Fiver.
Yeah, iron road. You not seen him? Iron rod? Man make him.
Kahar's speech was so outlandish and distorted at the best of times that it was only too common for the rabbits to be unsure what he meant. The vernacular words which he used now for iron and road, familiar enough to seagulls, his listeners had scarcely ever heard. Kahar was quick to impatience, and now, as often, they felt at a disadvantage in the face of his familiarity with a wider world than their own. Hazel thought quickly. Two things were clear. Kahar had evidently found a big warren some way off to the south. And whatever the iron road was, the warren was on this side, both of it and of a river. If he had understood rightly, it seemed to follow that the iron road and the river could be ignored for their purposes.
Kahar, he said, I want to be certain. Can we get to the rabbit's town without bothering about the iron road and the river?
Yeah. Not go to iron road. Rabbit's town in bushes for big, lonely fields. Plenty mothers.
How long would it take to go from here to the town?
I think 2 days is long way.
Good for you, Kahar. You've done everything we hoped. You rest now. We'll feed you as long as you want.
Sleep now. Tomorrow plenty beetle. Yeah.
The rabbits made their way back to the honeycomb. Hazel told Kahar's news, and a long, disorderly, intermittent discussion began. This was their way of reaching a conclusion. The fact that there was a warren 2 or 3 days' journey to the south flickered and oscillated down among them, as a penny wavers down through deep water, moving one way and the other, shifting, vanishing, reappearing, but always sinking toward the firm bottom. Hazel let the talk run on as long as it would, until at last they dispersed and slept. The next morning they went about their lives as usual, feeding Kahar and themselves, playing and digging. But all this time, just as a drop of water slowly swells until it is heavy enough to fall from a twig, the idea of what they meant to do was becoming clear and unanimous. By the following day, Hazel saw it plain. It so happened that the time for speaking came when he was sitting on the bank at sunrise with Fiver and 3 or 4 others. There was no need to summon a general gathering. The thing was settled. When it reached them, those who were not there would accept what he had said without having heard him at all.
This warren that Kahar found, said Hazel. He said it was big.
So we can't take it by force, said Bigwig.
I don't think I want to go and join it, said Hazel.
Do you? And leave here, replied Dandelion. After all our work? Besides, I reckon we'd have a thin time. No, I'm sure none of us wants to do that.
What we want is to get some does and bring them back here, said Hazel.
Will that be difficult, do you think?
I should have thought not, said Holly. Big warrens are often overcrowded, and some of the rabbits can't get enough to eat. The young does get edgy and nervous, and some of them don't have any kittens on that account. At least the kittens begin to grow inside them, and then they melt away again into their bodies. You know this?
I didn't know, said Strawberry.
That's because you've never been overcrowded. But our warren, the three of us warren, was overcrowded a year or two back, and a lot of the younger does were reabsorbing their litters before they were born. The Threera told me that long ago, Elereira made a bargain with Frith. Frith promised him that rabbits were not to be born dead or unwanted. If there's little chance of a decent life for them, it's a doe's privilege to take them back into her body unborn.
Yes, I remember the bargain story, said Hazel. So you think there may be discontented does? That's hopeful. We're agreed, then, that we ought to send an expedition to this warren, and that there's a good chance of being successful without fighting. Do you want everyone to go?
I say not, said Blackberry. 2 or 3 days' journey, and we're all in danger, both going and coming. It would be less dangerous for 3 or 4 rabbits than for Hrea. 3 or 4 can travel quickly, and aren't conspicuous. And the chief rabbit of this warren would be less likely to object to a few strangers coming with a civil request.
I'm sure that's right, said Hazel.
We'll send 4 rabbits, and they can explain how we come to be in this difficulty, and ask to be allowed to persuade some does to come back with them. I don't see that any chief rabbit can object to that. I wonder which of us would be the best to send.
Hazora, you mustn't go, said Dandelion. You're needed here, and we don't want to risk you. Everyone's agreed on that.
Hazel had known already that they would not let him lead the embassy. It was a disappointment, but nevertheless he felt that they were right. The other warren would have little opinion of a chief rabbit who ran his own errands. Besides, he was not particularly impressive in appearance or as a speaker. This was a job for someone else.
All right, he said. I knew you wouldn't let me go. I'm not the right fellow anyway. Holly is. He knows everything about moving in the open, and he'll be able to talk well when he gets there.
No one contradicted this. Holly was the obvious choice, but to select his companions was less easy. Everyone was ready to go, but the business was so important that at last they considered each rabbit in turn, discussing who would be the most likely to survive the long journey, to arrive in good shape, and to go down well in a strange warren. Bigwig, rejected on the grounds that he might quarrel in strange company, was inclined to be sulky at first, but came round when he remembered that he could go on looking after Kahar. Holly himself wanted to take Bluebell, but as Blackberry said, one funny joke at the expense of the chief rabbit might ruin everything. Finally, they chose Silver, Buckthorn, and Strawberry. Strawberry said little, but was obviously very much pleased. He had suffered a good deal to show that he was no coward, and now he had the satisfaction of knowing that he was worth something to his new friends. They started early in the morning, in the grey light. Kahar had undertaken to fly out later in the day to make sure they were going in the right direction and bring back news of their progress. Hazel and Bigwig went with them to the southern end of the hangar and watched as they slipped away, heading to the west of the distant farm. Holly seemed confident, and the other three were in high spirits. Soon they were lost to sight in the grass, and Hazel and Bigwig turned back into the wood.
"Well, we've done the best we can," said Hazel. "The rest's up to them, and to Elereira now. But surely it ought to be all right."
"Not a doubt of it," said Bigwig. "Let's hope they're back soon. I'm looking forward to a nice doe and a litter of kittens in my burrow. Lots of little bigwigs, Hazel. Think of that, and tremble."
Chapter 24 Nuthanger Farm.
One robin come to Nottingham, certainly with Uten line. He bride to God and mild Marie. to bring him Utsav again. Beside him stood a great-headed monk. He prayed to God Wuhibe. Faithful son, he knew good Robin. As soon as he him say.
Robin Hood and the Monk, Child's Ballads, number 119. Hazel sat on the bank in the midsummer night. There had been no more than 5 hours' darkness, and that of a pallid twilight quality, which kept him wakeful and restless. Everything was going well. Kahar had found Holly during the afternoon, and corrected his line a little to the west. He had left him in the shelter of a thick hedge, sure of his course for the big warren. It seemed certain now that 2 days would be enough for the journey. Bigwig and some of the other rabbits had already begun enlarging their burrows in preparation for Holly's return. Kahar had had a violent quarrel with a kestrel, screaming insults in a voice fit to startle a Cornish harbour. And although it had ended inconclusively, the kestrel seemed likely to regard the neighbourhood of the hangar with healthy respect for the future. Things had not looked better since they had first set out from Sandalford. A spirit of happy mischief entered into Hazel. He felt as he had on the morning when they crossed the Enbourne, and he had set out alone and found the beanfield. He was confident and ready for adventure. But what adventure? Something worth telling to Holly and Silver on their return. Something to, well, not to diminish what they were going to do. No, of course not. But just to show them that their chief rabbit was up to anything that they were up to. He thought it over as he hopped down the bank and sniffed out a patch of salad burnet in the grass. What, now, would be likely to give them just a little, not unpleasant shock? Suddenly, he thought, suppose when they got back that there were one or two does here already. And in the same moment, he remembered what Kahar had said about a box full of rabbits at the farm. What sort of rabbits could they be? Did they ever come out of their box? Had they ever seen a wild rabbit? Kahar had said that the farm was not far from the foot of the down, on a little hill, so it could easily be reached in the early morning, before its men were about. Any dogs would probably be chained, but the cats would be loose. A rabbit could outrun a cat, as long as he kept in the open and saw it coming first. The important thing was not to be stalked unawares. He should be able to move along the hedgerows without attracting Elil, unless he was very unlucky. But what did he intend to do, exactly? Why was he going to the farm? Hazel finished the last of the burnet and answered himself in the starlight. "I'll just have a look round," he said. "And if I can find those box rabbits, I'll try to talk to them. Nothing more than that. I'm not going to take any risks. Well, not real risks. Not until I see whether it's worth it, anyway." Should he go alone? It would be safer and more pleasant to take a companion, but not more than one. They must not attract attention. Who would be best? Bigwig? Dandelion? Hazel rejected them. He needed someone who would do as he was told and not start having ideas of his own. At once, he thought of Pipkin. Pipkin would follow him without question and do anything he asked. At this moment, he was probably asleep in the burrow, which he shared with Bluebell and Acorn, down a short run leading off the honeycomb. Hazel was lucky. He found Pipkin close to the mouth of the burrow and already awake. He brought him out without disturbing the other two rabbits and led him up by the run that gave on the bank. Pipkin looked about him uncertainly, bewildered and half expecting some danger.
"It's all right, Clearoo," said Hazel. "There's nothing to be afraid of. I want you to come down the hill and help me to find a farm I've heard about. We're just going to have a look round it."
"Round a farm, Hazel Rye? What for? Won't it be dangerous? Cats and dogs and—"
"No, you'll be quite all right with me. Just you and me. I don't want anyone else. I've got a secret plan. You mustn't tell the others, for the time being, anyway. I particularly want you to come, and no one else will do."
This had exactly the effect that Hazel intended. Pipkin needed no further persuasion, and they set off together over the grass track, across the turf, beyond and down the escarpment. They went through the narrow belt of trees and came into the field where Holly had called Bigwig in the dark. Here, Hazel paused, sniffing and listening. It was the time before dawn when owls return, usually hunting as they go. Although a full-grown rabbit is not really in danger from owls, there are few who take no account of them. Stoats and foxes might be abroad also, but the night was still and damp, and Hazel, secure in his mood of gay confidence, felt sure that he would either smell or hear any hunter on 4 feet. Wherever the farm might be, it must lie beyond the road that ran along the opposite edge of the field. He set off at an easy pace, with Pipkin close behind. Moving quietly in and out of the hedgerow, up which Holly and Bluebell had come, and passing, on their way, under the cables, humming faintly in the darkness above, they took only a few minutes to reach the road. There are times when we know for a certainty that all is well. A batsman who has played a fine innings will say afterward that he felt he could not miss the ball, and a speaker or an actor, on his lucky day, can sense his audience carrying him as though he were swimming in miraculous, buoyant water. Hazel had this feeling now. All round him was the quiet summer night, luminous with starlight, but paling to dawn on one side. There was nothing to fear, and he felt ready to skip through 1,000 farmyards, one after the other. As he sat with Pipkin on the bank above the tar-smelling road, it did not strike him as particularly lucky when he saw a young rat scuttle across from the opposite hedge and disappear into a clump of fading stitchwort below them. He had known that some guide or other would turn up. He scrambled quickly down the bank and found the rat nosing in the ditch.
"The farm," said Hazel. "Where's the farm? Near here? On a little hill?"
The rat stared at him with twitching whiskers. It had no particular reason to be friendly, but there was something in Hazel's look that made a civil answer natural.
"Over road, up lane."
The sky was growing lighter each moment. Hazel crossed the road without waiting for Pipkin, who caught him up under the hedge bordering the near side of the little lane. From here, after another listening pause, they began to make their way up the slope toward the northern skyline. Nuthanger is like a farm in an old tale. Between Eckenswell and the foot of Watership Down, and about 0.5 mile from each, there is a broad knoll, steeper on the north side, but falling gently on the south, like the down ridge itself. Narrow lanes climb both slopes and come together in a great ring of elm trees which encircles the flat summit. Any wind, even the lightest, draws from the height of the elms a rushing sound, multifoliate and powerful. Within this ring stands the farmhouse, with its barns and outbuildings. The house may be 200 years old, or it may be older, built of brick, with a stone-faced front looking south toward the down. On the east side, in front of the house, a barn stands clear of the ground on staddle stones, and opposite is the cow byre. As Hazel and Pipkin reached the top of the slope, the first light showed clearly the farmyard and buildings. The birds singing all about them were those to which they had been accustomed in former days. A robin on a low branch twittered a phrase and listened for another that answered him from beyond the farmhouse. A chaffinch gave its little falling song, and further off, high in an elm, a chiff-chaff began to call. Hazel stopped and then sat up, the better to scent the air. Powerful smells of straw and cow dung mingled with those of elm leaves, ashes, and cattle feed. Fainter traces came to his nose as the overtones of a bell sound in a trained ear. Tobacco, naturally. A good deal of cat, and rather less dog. And then, suddenly, and beyond doubt, rabbit. He looked at Pipkin and saw that he, too, had caught it. While these scents reached them, they were also listening. But beyond the light movements of the birds, and the first buzzing of the flies immediately around them, they could hear nothing but the continual susurration of the trees. Under the northern steep of the down, the air had been still, but here the southerly breeze was magnified by the elms, with their myriads of small, fluttering leaves, just as the effect of sunlight on a garden is magnified by dew. The sound, coming from the topmost branches, disturbed Hazel because it suggested some huge approach, an approach that was never completed, and he and Pipkin remained still for some time, listening tensely to this loud yet meaningless vehemence high overhead. They saw no cat, but near the house stood a flat-roofed dog kennel. They could just glimpse the dog asleep inside, a large, smooth-haired black dog, with head on paws. Hazel could not see a chain, but then, after a moment, he noticed the line of a thin rope that came out through the kennel door and ended in some sort of fastening on the roof. Why a rope? He wondered, and then thought, because a restless dog cannot rattle it in the night. The two rabbits began to wander among the outbuildings. At first they took care to remain in cover and continually on the watch for cats, but they saw none, and soon grew bolder, crossing open spaces and even stopping to nibble at dandelions in the patches of weeds and rough grass. Guided by scent, Hazel made his way to a low-roofed shed. The door was half open, and he went through it with scarcely a pause at the brick threshold. Immediately opposite the door, on a broad wooden shelf, a kind of platform, stood a wire-fronted hutch. Through the mesh, he could see a brown bowl, some green stuff, and the ears of two or three rabbits. As he stared, one of the rabbits came close to the wire, looked out, and saw him. Beside the platform on the near side was an upended bale of straw. Hazel jumped lightly on it, and from there to the thick planks, which were old and soft-surfaced, dusty and covered with chaff. Then he turned back to Pipkin, waiting just inside the door. "Cleoroo," he said, "there's only one way out of this place. You'll have to keep watching for cats, or we may be trapped. Stay at the door, and if you see a cat outside, tell me at once."
"Right, Hazel Ra," said Pipkin. "It's all clear at the moment."
Hazel went up to the side of the hutch. The wired front projected over the edge of the shelf, so that he could neither reach it nor look in. But there was a knothole in one of the boards facing him, and on the far side he could see a twitching nose. "I am Hazel Ra," he said. "I have come to talk to you. Can you understand me?" The answer was in a slightly strange, but perfectly intelligible, lapine.
"Yes, we understand you. My name is Boxwood. Where do you come from?"
"From the hills. My friends and I live as we please, without men. We eat the grass, lie in the sun, and sleep underground. How many are you?"
"Four, bucks and does."
"Do you ever come out?"
"Yes, sometimes. A child takes us out and puts us in a pen on the grass."
"I've come to tell you about my warren. We need more rabbits. We want you to run away from the farm and join us."
"There's a wire door at the back of this hutch," said Boxwood. "Come down there. We can talk more easily."
The door was made of wire netting on a wooden frame, with two leather hinges nailed to the uprights and a hasp and staple fastened with a twist of wire. Four rabbits were crowded against the wire, pressing their noses through the mesh. Two, Laurel and Clover, were short-haired black angoras. The others, Boxwood and his doe Haystack, were black and white Himalayans. Hazel began to speak about the life of the downs and the excitement and freedom enjoyed by wild rabbits. In his usual straightforward way, he told about the predicament of his warren in having no does, and how he had come to look for some.
"But," he said, "we don't want to steal your does. All four of you are welcome to join us, bucks and does alike. There's plenty for everyone on the hills."
He went on to talk of the evening feed in the sunset and of early morning in the long grass. The hutch rabbits seemed at once bewildered and fascinated. Clover, the Angora doe, a strong, active rabbit, was clearly excited by Hazel's description and asked several questions about the warren and the downs. It became plain that they thought of their life in the hutch as dull but safe. They had learned a good deal about Elil from some source or other, and seemed sure that few wild rabbits survived for long. Hazel realized that although they were glad to talk to him, and welcomed his visit because it brought little excitement and change into their monotonous life, it was not within their capacity to take a decision and act on it. They did not know how to make up their minds. To him and his companions, sensing and acting was second nature. But these rabbits had never had to act to save their lives, or even to find a meal. If he was going to get any of them as far as the down, they would have to be urged. He sat, quiet for a little, nibbling a patch of bran spilled on the boards outside the hutch. Then he said, "I must go back now to my friends in the hills, but we shall return. We shall come one night, and when we do, believe me, we shall open your hutch as easily as the farmer does, and then any of you who wish will be free to come with us." Boxwood was about to reply, when suddenly Pipkin spoke from the floor.
"Hazel, there's a cat in the yard outside."
"We're not afraid of cats," said Hazel to Boxwood, "as long as we're in the open." Trying to appear unhurried, he went back to the floor by way of the straw bale and crossed over the door. Pipkin was looking through the hinge. He was plainly frightened.
"I think it smelled us, Hazel,"
he said.
"I'm afraid it knows where we are."
"Don't stay there, then," said Hazel. "Follow me close and run when I do." Without waiting to look out through the hinge, he went round the half-open door of the shed and stopped on the threshold. The cat, a tabby with white chest and paws, was at the further end of the little yard, walking slowly and deliberately along the side of a pile of logs. When Hazel appeared in the doorway, it saw him at once and stood stock still, with staring eyes and twitching tail. Hazel hopped slowly across the threshold and stopped again. Already sunlight was slanting across the yard, and in the stillness the flies buzzed about a patch of dung a few feet away. There was a smell of straw and dust and hawthorn.
"You look hungry," said Hazel to the cat. "Rats getting too clever, I suppose?"
The cat made no reply. Hazel sat blinking in the sunshine. The cat crouched almost flat on the ground, thrusting its head forward between its front paws. Close behind, Pipkin fidgeted, and Hazel, never taking his eyes from the cat, could sense that he was trembling.
"Don't be frightened, Leroux," he whispered. "I'll get you away, but you must wait till it comes for us. Keep still."
The cat began to lash its tail. Its hindquarters lifted and wagged from side to side in mounting excitement.
"Can you run?" said Hazel. "I think not. Why, you pop-eyed backdoor saucer scraper."
The cat flung itself across the yard, and the two rabbits leaped into flight with great thrusts of their hind legs. The cat came very fast indeed, and although both of them had been braced, ready to move on the instant, they were barely out of the yard in time. Racing up the side of the long barn, they heard the Labrador barking in excitement as it ran to the full extent of its rope. A man's voice shouted to it. From the cover of the hedge beside the lane, they turned and looked back. The cat had stopped short and was licking one paw with a pretense of nonchalance.
"They hate to look silly," said Hazel. "It won't give us any more trouble. If it hadn't charged at us like that, it would have followed us much further and probably called up another as well. And somehow you can't make a dash unless they do it first. It's a good thing you saw it coming, Leroux."
"I'm glad if I helped, Hazel. But what were we up to? And why did you talk to the rabbits in the box?"
"I'll tell you all about it later on. Let's go into the field now and feed. Then we can make our way home. As slowly as you like."
Chapter 25. The Raid. He went consenting, or else he was no king. It was no one's place to say to him, "It is time to make the offering." Mary Renault, the king must die. As things turned out, Hazel and Pipkin did not come back to the honeycomb until the evening. They were still feeding in the field when it came on to rain, with a cold wind, and they took shelter first in the nearby ditch, and then, since the ditch was on a slope and had a fair flow of rainwater in about 10 minutes, among some sheds halfway down the lane. They burrowed into a thick pile of straw, and for some time remained listening for rats. But all was quiet, and they grew drowsy and fell asleep, while outside the rain settled in for the morning. When they woke, it was mid-afternoon, and still drizzling. It seemed to Hazel that there was no particular hurry. The going would be troublesome in the wet, and anyway, no self-respecting rabbit could leave without a forage round the sheds. A pile of mangels and swedes occupied them for some time, and they set out only when the light was beginning to fade. They took their time and reached the hangar a little before dark, with nothing worse to trouble them than the discomfort of soaking wet fur. Only two or three of the rabbits were out to a rather subdued sylphlay in the wet. No one remarked on their absence, and Hazel went underground at once, telling Pipkin to say nothing about their adventure for the time being. He found his burrow empty, lay down, and fell asleep. Waking, he found Fiver beside him as usual. It was some time before dawn. The earth floor felt pleasantly dry and snug, and he was about to go back to sleep when Fiver spoke.
"You've been wet through, Hazel."
"Well, what about it? The grass is wet, you know."
"You didn't get so wet on Sylphlay. You were soaked. You weren't here at all yesterday, were you?"
"Oh, I went foraging down the hill."
"Eating swedes. And your feet smell of farmyard, hens' droppings and bran. But there's some other funny thing besides. Something I can't smell."
"What happened?" "Well, I had a bit of a brush with a cat. But why worry?"
"Because you're concealing something, Hazel. Something dangerous."
"It's Holly that's in danger, not I. Why bother about me?"
"Holly?" replied Fiver in surprise. "But Holly and the others reached the Big Warren early yesterday evening. Cahar told us. Do you mean to say you didn't know?"
Hazel felt fairly caught out. "Well, I know now," he replied. "I'm glad to hear it."
"So it comes to this," said Fiver. "You went to a farm yesterday and escaped from a cat. And whatever you were up to, it was so much on your mind that you forgot to ask about Holly last night."
"Well, all right, Fiver. I'll tell you all about it.
I took Pipkin and went to that farm that Cahar told us about, where there are rabbits in a hutch. I found the rabbits and talked to them, and I've taken a notion to go back one night and get them out, to come and join us here."
"What for?"
"Well, two of them are does, that's what for. But if Holly's successful, we shall soon have plenty of does. And from all I've ever heard of hutch rabbits, they don't take easily to wildlife. The truth is, you're just a silly show-off."
"A silly show-off?" said Hazel.
"Well, we'll just see whether Bigwig and Blackberry think so. Risking your life and other rabbits' lives for something that's of little or no value to us," said Fiver. "Oh, yes, of course the others will go with you. You're their chief rabbit. You're supposed to decide what's sensible, and they trust you. Persuading them will prove nothing, but three or four dead rabbits will prove you're a fool when it's too late."
"Oh, be quiet," answered Hazel. "I'm going to sleep." During Sylphlay next morning, with Pipkin for a respectful chorus, he told the others about his visit to the farm. As he had expected, Bigwig jumped at the idea of a raid to free the hutch rabbits.
"It can't go wrong," he said. "It's a splendid idea, Hazel. I don't know how you open a hutch, but Blackberry will see to that. What annoys me is to think you ran from that cat. A good rabbit's a match for a cat any day. My mother went for one once, and she fairly gave it something to remember, I can tell you. Scratched its fur out like willow herb in autumn. Just leave the farm cats to me and one or two of the others."
Blackberry took a little more convincing, but he, like Bigwig and Hazel himself, was secretly disappointed not to have gone on the expedition with Holly, and when the other two pointed out that they were relying on him to tell them how to get the hut open, he agreed to come.
"Do we need to take everyone?" he asked.
You say the dog's tied up, and I suppose there can't be more than 3 cats. Too many rabbits will only be a nuisance in the dark. Someone will get lost, and we shall have to spend time looking for him.
Well, Dandelion, Speedwell and Hawkbit then, said Bigwig, and leave the others behind. Do you mean to go tonight, Hazel Ra?
Yes, the sooner the better, said Hazel. Get hold of those 3 and tell them. Pity it's going to be dark. We could have taken Kahar. He'd have enjoyed it.
However, their hopes for that night were disappointed, for the rain returned before dusk, settling in on a northwest wind and carrying up the hill the sweet, sour smell of flowering privet from cottage hedges below. Hazel sat on the bank until the light had quite faded. At last, when it was clear that the rain was going to stay for the night, he joined the others in the honeycomb. They had persuaded Kahar to come down out of the wind and wet, and one of Dandelion's tales of El Herrera was followed by an extraordinary story that left everyone mystified but fascinated, about a time when Frith had to go away on a journey, leaving the whole world to be covered with rain. But a man built a great floating hutch that held all the animals and birds until Frith returned and let them out.
"It won't happen tonight, will it, Hazel Ra?"
asked Pipkin, listening to the rain and the beech leaves outside.
"There's no hutch here."
"Kahar'll fly you up to the moon, Cleoru," said Bluebell. "And you can come down on Bigwig's head like a birch branch in the frost. But there's time to go to sleep first."
Before Fiver slept, however, he talked again to Hazel about the raid.
"I suppose it's no good asking you not to go," he said.
"Look here," answered Hazel.
"Have you got one of your bad turns about the farm? If you have, why not say so straight out? Then we'd all know where we were."
"I've no feelings about the farm, one way or the other," said Fiver. "But that doesn't necessarily mean it's all right. The feelings come when they will. They don't always come. Not for the Lendry, not for the Crow. If it comes to that, I've no idea what's happening to Holly and the others. It might be good or bad. But there's something that frightens me about you yourself, Hazel. Just you, not any of the others. You're all alone, sharp and clear, like a dead branch against the sky."
"Well, if you mean you can see trouble for me and not for any of the others, tell them, and I'll leave it to them to decide whether I ought to keep out of it. But that's giving up a lot, Fiver, you know. Even with your word for it, someone's bound to think I'm afraid."
"Well, I say it's not worth the risk, Hazel. Why not wait for Holly to come back? That's all we have to do."
"I'll be snared if I wait for Holly. Can't you see that the very thing I want is to have these does here when he comes back? But look, Fiver, I'll tell you what. I've come to trust you so much that I'll take the greatest care. In fact, I won't even go into the farmyard myself. I'll stay outside at the top of the lane, and if that's not meeting your fears halfway, then I don't know what is."
Fiver said no more, and Hazel turned his thoughts to the raid and the difficulty he foresaw of getting the hutch rabbits to go the distance back to the warren. The next day was bright and dry, with a fresh wind that cleared up what remained of the wet. The clouds came racing over the ridge from the south as they had on the May evening when Hazel first climbed the down. But now they were higher and smaller, settling at last into a mackerel sky like a beach at low tide. Hazel took Bigwig and Blackberry to the edge of the escarpment, whence they could look across to Nuthanger on its little hill. He described the approach and went on to explain how the rabbit hutch was to be found. Bigwig was in high spirits. The wind and the prospect of action excited him, and he spent some time with Dandelion, Hawkbit, and Speedwell, pretending to be a cat and encouraging them to attack him as realistically as they could. Hazel, whose talk with Fiver had somewhat clouded him, recovered as he watched them tussling over the grass and ended by joining in himself, first as an attacker and then as the cat, staring and quivering for all the world like the Nuthanger tabby.
"I shall be disappointed if we don't meet a cat after all this," said Dandelion, as he waited for his turn to run at a fallen beech branch from one side, claw it twice, and dash out again. "I feel a really dangerous animal."
"You watch him, Mr. Dando," said Kahar,
who was hunting for snails in the grass nearby.
"Mr. Pigwick, if an't you think all van pig yoke, make you brave. Cat in a yoke. You no see him, you no eat him. Then yomp, he come."
"But we're not going there to eat, Cahar," said Bigwig.
"That makes all the difference. We shan't stop watching for cats the whole time."
"Why not eat the cat?"
said Bluebell.
"Or bring one back here for breeding? That ought to improve the worm stock no end."
Hazel and Bigwig had decided that the raid should be carried out as soon after dark as the farm was quiet. This meant that they would cover the half mile to the outlying sheds at sunset, instead of risking the confusion of a night journey over ground that only Hazel knew. They could steal a meal among the Swedes, halt till darkness, and cover the short distance to the farm after a good rest. Then, provided they could cope with the cats, there would be plenty of time to tackle the hutch, whereas if they were to arrive at dawn they would be working against time before men came on the scene. Finally, the hutch rabbits would not be missed until the following morning.
"And remember," said Hazel, "it'll probably take these rabbits a long time to get to the down. We shall have to be patient with them. I'd rather do that in darkness, Elil or no Elil. We don't want to be messing about in broad daylight."
"If it comes to the worst," said Bigwig, "we can leave the hutch rabbits and bolt. Elil take the hindmost, don't they? I know it's tough, but if there's real trouble, we ought to save our own rabbits first. Let's hope that doesn't happen, though."
When they came to set out, Fiver was nowhere to be seen. Hazel felt relieved, for he had been afraid that Fiver might say something that would lower their spirits. But there was nothing worse to contend with than Pipkin's disappointment at being left behind, and this was dispelled when Hazel assured him that the only reason was that he had already done his bit. Bluebell, Acorn, and Pipkin came with them to the foot of the hill and watched them down the hedgerow. They reached the sheds in the twilight after sunset. The summer nightfall was unbroken by owls, and so quiet that they could plainly hear the intermittent, monotonous chug-chug-chug of a nightingale in the distant woods. Two rats among the Swedes showed their teeth, thought better of it, and left them alone. When they had foraged, they rested comfortably in the straw until the western light was quite gone. Rabbits do not name the stars, but nevertheless, Hazel was familiar with the sight of Capella rising, and he watched it now until it stood gold and bright in the dark northeastern horizon to the right of the farm. When it reached a certain point, which he had fixed beside a bare branch, he roused the others and led them up the slope toward the elms. Near the top, he slipped through the hedge and brought them down into the lane. Hazel had already told Bigwig of his promise to Fiver to keep out of danger, and Bigwig, who had changed much since the early days, had no fault to find.
"If that's what Fiver says, you'd better do it, Hazel," he said. "Anyhow, it'll suit us. You stay outside the farm in a safe place, and we'll bring the rabbits out to you. Then you can take over and get us all away."
What Hazel had not said was that the idea that he should remain in the lane was his own suggestion, and that Fiver had acquiesced only because he could not persuade him to give up the idea of the raid altogether. Crouching under a fallen branch on the verge of the lane, Hazel watched the others as they followed Bigwig down toward the farmyard. They went slowly, rabbit fashion, hop, step, and pause. The night was dark, and they were soon out of sight, though he could hear them moving down the side of the long barn. He settled down to wait. Bigwig's hopes of action were fulfilled almost at once. The cat that he met as he reached the far end of the barn was not Hazel's tabby, but another. Ginger, black and white, and therefore a female. One of those slim, trotting, quick-moving, tail-twitching cats that sit on farm windowsills in the rain or keep watch from the tops of sacks on sunny afternoons. It came briskly round the corner of the barn, saw the rabbits, and stopped dead. Without an instant's hesitation, Bigwig went straight for it, as though it had been the beech branch on the down. But quicker even than he, Dandelion ran forward, scratched it, and leaped clear. As it turned, Bigwig threw his full weight upon it from the other side. The cat closed with him, biting and scratching, and Bigwig rolled over on the ground.
The others could hear him swearing like a cat himself and struggling for a hold. Then he sank one back leg into the cat's side and kicked backward rapidly several times. Anyone who is familiar with cats knows that they do not care for a determined assailant. A dog that tries to make itself pleasant to a cat may very well get scratched for its pains. But let that same dog rush into the attack, and many a cat will not wait to meet it. The farm cat was bewildered by the speed and fury of Bigwig's charge. It was no weakling and a good ratter, but it had the bad luck to be up against a dedicated fighter who was spoiling for action. As it scrambled out of Bigwig's reach, Speedwell cuffed it across the face. This was the last blow struck, for the wounded cat made off across the yard and disappeared under the fence of the cow buyer. Bigwig was bleeding from three deep, parallel scratches on the inside of one hind leg. The others gathered round, praising him, but he cut them short, looking round the dark yard as he tried to get his bearings. "Come on," he said. "Quickly, too, while the dog's still quiet. The shed, the hutch, where do we go?" It was Hawkbit who found the little yard. Hazel had been anxious in case the shed door might be shut, but it stood just ajar, and the five of them slipped in one after the other. In the thick gloom, they could not make out the hutch, but they could both smell and hear the rabbits. "Blackberry," said Bigwig quickly, "you come with me and get the hutch open. You other three, keep watching. If another cat comes, you'll have to take it on yourselves." "Fine," said Dandelion. "Just leave it to us." Bigwig and Blackberry found the straw bale and climbed on the planks. As they did so, Boxwood spoke from the hutch. "Who's that?" "Hazel Ra, have you come back?"
"Hazel Ra sent us," answered Blackberry. "We've come to let you out. Will you come with us?"
There was a pause and some movement in the hay, and then Clover replied,
"Yes, let us out."
Blackberry sniffed his way round to the wire door and sat up, nosing over the frame, the hasp and the staple. It took him some time to realize that the leather hinges were soft enough to bite. Then he found that they lay so smooth and flush with the frame that he could not get his teeth to them. Several times he tried to find a grip, and at last sat back on his haunches at a loss.
"I don't think this door's going to be any good," he said. "I wonder whether there's some other way."
At that moment it happened that Boxwood stood on his hind legs and put his front paws high on the wire. Beneath his weight, the top of the door was pressed slightly outward, and the upper of the two leather hinges gave slightly where the outer nail held it to the body of the hutch itself. As Boxwood dropped back on all fours, Blackberry saw that the hinge had buckled and risen just clear of the wood.
"Try it now,"
he said to Bigwig. Bigwig got his teeth to the hinge and pulled. It tore a very little.
"By Frith, that'll do,"
said Blackberry, for all the world like the Duke of Wellington at Salamanca.
"We just need time, that's all."
The hinge had been well made and did not give way until they had put it to a great deal more tugging and biting. Dandelion grew nervous and twice gave a false alarm. Bigwig, realizing that the sentries were on the jump from watching and waiting with nothing to do, changed places with him and sent Speedwell up to take over from Blackberry. When at last Dandelion and Speedwell had pulled the leather strip off the nail, Bigwig came back to the hutch himself. But they did not seem much nearer to success. Whenever one of the rabbits inside stood up and rested its forepaws on the upper part of the wire, the door pivoted lightly on the axis of the staple and the lower hinge. But the lower hinge did not tear. Blowing through his whiskers with impatience, Bigwig brought Blackberry back from the threshold.
"What's to be done?" he said. "We need some magic, like that lump of wood you shoved into the river."
Blackberry looked at the door as Boxwood, inside, pushed it again. The upright of the frame pressed tight against the lower strip of leather, but it held smooth and firm, offering no purchase for teeth.
"Push it the other way. Push from this side," he said. "You push, Bigwig. Tell that rabbit inside to get down."
When Bigwig stood up and pushed the top of the door inward, the frame immediately pivoted much further than before, because there was no sill along the bottom of the outer side to stop it. The leather hinge twisted, and Bigwig nearly lost his balance. If it had not been for the metal staple arresting the pivoting, he might actually have fallen inside the hutch. Startled, he jumped back, growling.
"Well, you said magic, didn't you?"
said Blackberry, with satisfaction.
Do it again.
No strip of leather, held by only one broad-headed nail at each end, can stand up for long to repeated twisting. Soon, one of the nail heads was almost out of sight under the frayed edges.
Careful now, said Blackberry. If it gives way suddenly, you'll go flying. Just pull it off with your teeth.
2 minutes later, the door hung sagging on the staple alone. Clover pushed the hinge side open and came out, followed by Boxwood. When several creatures, men or animals, have worked together to overcome something offering resistance and have at last succeeded, there follows often a pause, as though they felt the propriety of paying respect to the adversary who's put up so good a fight. The great tree falls, splitting, cracking, rushing down in leaves to the final shuddering blow along the ground. Then the foresters are silent and do not at once sit down. After hours, the deep snowdrift has been cleared, and the lorry is ready to take the men home out of the cold. But they stand a while, leaning on their spades and only nodding unsmilingly as the car drivers go through, waving their thanks. The cunning hutch door had become nothing but a piece of wire netting, tacked to a frame made from 4 strips of half by half, and the rabbit sat on the planks, sniffing and nosing it without talking. After a little while, the other 2 occupants of the hutch, Laurel and Haystack, came hesitantly out and looked about them.
"Where is Hazel Ra?"
asked Laurel.
"Not far away," said Blackberry. "He's waiting in the lane." "What is the lane?" "The lane?" said Blackberry in surprise. "Surely..."
He stopped, as it came over him, that these rabbits knew neither lane nor farmyard. They had not the least idea of their most immediate surroundings. He was reflecting on what this meant when Bigwig spoke.
"We mustn't wait about now," he said. "Follow me, all of you."
"But where?" said Boxwood.
"Well, out of here, of course,"
said Bigwig impatiently. Boxwood looked about him.
"I don't know," he began.
"Well, I do," said Bigwig.
"Just come with us. Never mind anything else."
The hutch rabbits looked at each other in bewilderment. It was plain that they were afraid of the great, bristling buck with his strange shock of fur and his smell of fresh blood. They did not know what to do, or understand what was expected of them. They remembered Hazel. They had been excited by the forcing of the door, and curious to come through it once it was open. Otherwise, they had no purpose whatever, and no means of forming one. They had no more idea of what was involved than a small child who says he will accompany the climbers up the fell. Blackberry's heart sank. What was to be done with them? Left to themselves, they would hop slowly about the shed and the yard until the cats got them. Of their own accord, they could no more run to the hills than fly to the moon. Was there no simple, plain idea that might get them, or some of them, on the move? He turned to Clover.
"I don't suppose you've ever eaten grass by night," he said. "It tastes much better than by day. Let's all go and have some, shall we?"
"Oh, yes," said Clover. "I'd like that. But will it be safe? We're all very much afraid of the cats, you know. They come and stare at us sometimes through the wire, and it makes us shiver." This showed at least the beginnings of sense, thought Blackberry.
"The big rabbit is a match for any cat," he replied. "He nearly killed one on the way here tonight."
"And he doesn't want to fight another if he can help it," said Bigwig briskly. "So if you do want to eat grass by moonlight, let's go to where Hazel Ra's waiting for us."
As Bigwig led the way into the yard, he could make out the shape of the cat that he had beaten, watching from the woodpile. Cat-like, it was fascinated by the rabbits and could not leave them alone. But it evidently had no stomach for another fight, and as they crossed the yard, it stayed where it was. The pace was frighteningly slow. Boxwood and Clover seemed to have grasped that there was some sort of urgency, and were clearly doing their best to keep up. But the other 2 rabbits, once they had hopped into the yard, sat up and looked about them in a foolish manner, completely at a loss. After a good deal of delay, during which the cat left the woodpile and began to move stealthily round toward the side of the shed, Blackberry managed to get them out into the farmyard. But here, finding themselves in an even more open place, they settled into a kind of static panic, like that which sometimes comes upon inexperienced climbers exposed on a sheer face. They could not move, but sat blinking and staring about them in the darkness, taking no notice of Blackberry's coaxing or Bigwig's orders. At this moment, a second cat, Hazel's tabby, came round the further end of the farmhouse and made toward them. As it passed the kennel, the Labrador woke and sat up, thrusting out its head and shoulders and looking first to one side and then the other. It saw the rabbits, ran to the length of its rope, and began to bark.
"Come on," said Bigwig. "We can't stay here. Up the line, everybody, and quickly, too."
Blackberry, Speedwell, and Hawkbit ran at once, taking Boxwood and Clover with them into the darkness under the barn. Dandelion remained beside Haystack, begging her to move, and expecting every moment to feel the cat's claws in his back. Bigwig leaped across to him.
"Dandelion," he said in his ear, "get out of it, unless you want to be killed."
"But the—"
began Dandelion.
"Do as I say," said Bigwig.
The noise of barking was fearful, and he himself was close to panic. Dandelion hesitated a moment longer. Then he left Haystack and shot up the lane with Bigwig beside him. They found the others gathered round Hazel under the bank. Boxwood and Clover were trembling and seemed exhausted. Hazel was talking to them reassuringly, but broke off as Bigwig appeared out of the dark. The dog stopped barking, and there was quiet.
"We're all here," said Bigwig. "Shall we go, Hazel?"
"But there were four hutch rabbits," said Hazel.
"Where are the other two?"
"In the farmyard,"
said Blackberry.
"We couldn't do anything with them, and then the dog began to bark."
"Yes, I heard it. You mean they're loose?"
"They'll be a lot looser soon," said Bigwig angrily. "The cats are there."
"Why did you leave them then?"
"Because I wouldn't move. It was bad enough before the dog started."
"Is the dog tied?" asked Hazel.
"Yes, it's tied. But do you expect any rabbit to stand his ground a few feet from an angry dog?"
"No, of course not," replied Hazel. "You've done wonders, Bigwig. They were just telling me, before you came, that you gave one of the cats such a beating that it was afraid to come back for more. Now, look, do you think you and Blackberry, with Speedwell here and Hawkbit, can get these two rabbits back to the warren? I'm afraid you may need most of the night. They can't go very fast, and you'll have to be patient with them. Dandelion, you come with me, will you?"
"Where, Hazel Ra?"
"To fetch the other two," said Hazel. "You're the fastest, so it won't be so dangerous for you, will it? Now don't hang about, Bigwig, there's a good fellow. I'll see you tomorrow."
Before Bigwig could reply, he had disappeared under the elms. Dandelion remained where he was, looking at Bigwig uncertainly.
"Are you going to do what he says?" asked Bigwig.
"Well, are you?" said Dandelion. It took Bigwig no more than a moment to realize that if he said he was not, complete disorganization would follow. He could not take all the others back into the farm, and he could not leave them alone. He muttered something about Hazel being too embryo clever by half, cuffed Hawkbit off a sow thistle he was nibbling, and led his five rabbits over the bank into the field. Dandelion, left alone, set off after Hazel into the farmyard. As he went down the side of the barn, he could hear Hazel out in the open, near the doe haystack. Neither of the hutch rabbits had moved from where he and Bigwig had left them. The dog had returned to its kennel, but although it was not to be seen, he felt that it was awake and watchful. He came cautiously out of the shadow and approached Hazel.
"I'm just having a chat with Haystack here," said Hazel. "I've been explaining that we've got a little way to go. Do you think you could hop across to Laurel and get him to join us?"
He spoke almost gaily, but Dandelion could see his dilated eyes and the slight trembling of his front paws. He himself was now sensing something peculiar, a kind of luminosity in the air. There seemed to be a curious vibration somewhere in the distance. He looked round for the cats and saw that, as he feared, both were crouching in front of the farmhouse a little way off. Their reluctance to come closer could be attributed to Bigwig, but they would not go away. Looking across the yard at them, Dandelion felt a sudden clutch of horror.
"Hazel!"
he whispered.
"The cats!
Dear Frith, why are their eyes glittering green like that? Look!
Hazel sat up quickly, and as he did so, Dandelion leapt back in real terror, for Hazel's eyes were shining a deep, glowing red in the dark. At that moment, the humming vibration grew louder, quenched